Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the C5 Symposium for Wednesday morning on the Turfgrass Monograph. The history of this has been that the first Turfgrass Monograph was published in 1969. 1992, the second version came out. And around 2008, 2009, we were talking with several colleagues, and it was discussed the fact that probably about time for another one. We approached Crop Science about developing a revision of the second monograph. They enthusiastically supported that. And so we began the process in 2009, submitting a formal proposal and having that reviewed by Crop Science and getting a thumbs up approval for that. Brian Horgan from Minnesota and Stacy Bonos from Rutgers University were agreed to become co-editors of that monograph, and we then identified a number of authors and a number of chapters, and we tried to pair junior authors with senior authors, trying to invest as many people in this as we could. We have several new topics that have not been in the previous monographs, things like turfgrass outreach will be in there. More focus on environmental issues across the board. Monograph has been organized into six sections, 31 chapters, 75 authors. Each section was assigned to one of the three associate editors. All of those chapters have been reviewed, so this will be a peer-reviewed publication. Like I said this morning earlier in the business meeting, most of those chapters have been submitted and are in the edit stage at headquarters. They've already been reviewed and revised. We have a few left that are coming in following the revisions and the reviews. Galley proofs are already starting to be sent out. We hope to see this published soon in 2012 then. So for this morning symposium, the editors got together and we selected six representative chapters out of the monograph to be highlighted here. And the first one is in the turfgrass industry, and James Brunninger will present this, which has been quite a task just judging even from the list of authors here that he has developed. Jamie?
Thanks, John. Can everyone hear me? Okay. Good. There are no junior authors on this paper. I really appreciate the contributions of Mark Welderlin, who works with PBI Gordon, Bruce Augustin, who was working with Scotts at the time when this chapter was constructed, Van Klein with Toro, and then Kevin Morris with the National Turfgrass Federation. Everyone did a superb job, and each of us took various sections of the chapter, and I'd like to go through that. Now, I'm not going to go through it in great detail, but I'd like to just provide an overview to you so you can buy the book, the monograph, and look at some of this information for yourself, because it's a nice collection of information from a manufacturer perspective to describe the industry. So this chapter really takes a new approach at looking at the turf industry from a manufacturer perspective. The chapter would be a resource for students and university faculty on how manufacturers didn't develop products for this industry. It provides insight into people who want to pursue a career in the industry as a manufacturer representative. And it's a collection of numbers that describe the industry. There are industry-focused sections. One, the first section written by Mark Welderlin introduces the chapter, and we'll cover that. Irrigation and equipment was written by Van Klein. Cultivar development was written by Kevin. Kevin is here, so thank you, Kevin, for your contributions. I wrote the section on plant protection products, and then Bruce Augustin wrote a section on fertilizer. Here is the turf grass industry by the numbers. And you can take a look at these numbers, and at the end, we'll go through them, and you can see what these numbers represent. But there are very large numbers, and some of you should know what these numbers are. Okay? Okay. The introduction section covers changes that have happened to the turf industry in the last 20 years and their impact. So the first, of course, is information technology and the use of desktop computers and their impact on the industry. The big box retailers, the Lowe's, the Walmarts, how they have affected the retail market. The pursuit of turf quality with TV golf and the interest in quality from athletic fields and the home lawn perspective, and some of the new chemistry that has come on board in the last 20 years, where we've gone from pounds of product per acre to ounces, or if you take the metric, grams of active per hectare, very low rates. And then Mark did a nice job of collecting the numbers, which some of those numbers you just saw. We also address some of the market forces ahead, and if you've been paying attention to the program, a lot of what we've talked about this week in the presentations have to do with some of these market forces: water, pesticide use, fertilizer use, greenhouse gas, land use challenges. Those are all going to affect us in the future, and some of the economic challenges have just occurred and what it's translated to in our industry. And then Mark covers the international turf markets and how golf has a major player in the international turf market. Van did a nice job covering turf grass equipment. And he compares and contrasts the professional turf products in the equipment area, going from large, powerful, technology complex equipment, and they're expensive to purchase and maintain, and contrast that with the residential consumer market. And then talks about the zero-turn mowing equipment, sports turf equipment, and then the impact of the disappearance of the two-cycle engine disappearing from product lines due to regulations, and then the demand for increased productivity. The homeowner now wants to get his lawn done even faster than ever before, and they're going very quickly across the lawn, and they want to get on and do what they'd like to do. Some of the driving forces here in equipment is now engineers are able to use desktop computers to work on equipment and design equipment, so reduce product development times using the computer. There's a demand for service for equipment, and both from a professional and as well as the residential market, and they want more services. And then there's this demand for turf quality, which includes grooming of the surface, fairway management, as well as golf course roughs. There's been a lot of innovation in the equipment in the last 20 years. Van had a nice list of everything that's been, a number of items that have been designed and put on the market: recycler mowers, zero-turn mowers. You can pick your favorite piece of equipment, but he did miss this piece of equipment, which I really like. He forgot the bicycle mower. Van also covered turf grass irrigation, and he talks about how the turf grass irrigation business is very different from the other turf businesses, and it's a collaboration between three distinct businesses: irrigation equipment, where we design heads and controllers, and then the irrigation design, where we're putting all the pieces together, and then the installation business, where you're actually custom installing a particular piece of or irrigation for a particular property. He also talked about the different components being portable or movable irrigation systems versus the permanent turf irrigation systems, And with the movable parts, you know, with a irrigation where you could go from a traveler sprinkler to a single head for an athletic turf. He also compared and contrasted the home lawn system, and this is pretty fascinating, where we go from 10 to 20 sprinkler heads divided between 3 to 5 zones, where you just use a few hundred gallons of municipal water, and then you compare that with a golf course system where you have 100 acres through, and you're irrigating through 3,000 sprinkler heads, each individually valved and controlled, and pumping up to 1 million gallons of water from a dedicated water supply. So a lot of complexity there. Some of the advances, improvements in sprinkler head design and uniformity of distribution. The desktop computers has given us greater functionality. And then some sites actually have on-site water weather systems to improve the accuracy of the irrigation requirements. What's in the future? Van talked about in this chapter trying to make every drop of water count, making every drop of water effective, and trying to sustain turf with the least amount of water possible, and also covers water quality and dealing with increased salinity levels from various water supplies. Kevin did a very nice job on this section talking about cultivar development, and we got a lot of compliments from the reviewers on this section, so nice job on that, Kevin. Kevin covered the turfgrass breeder industry, and it really is different than the major crops where we have large operations with corn, cotton, soybeans, canola. The turfgrass breeder industry is very small compared to these major crops, and it's composed of small breeding programs that are much smaller. And in Oregon, we only have 8 companies that have dedicated turfgrass breeding operations. And, of course, you know, in breeding, the largest for cool season grasses is at Rutgers. And then those of you that were on the turfgrass tour saw the smaller operations, and we went to Blade Runner on Sunday and saw what they're doing around zoysia grass, so a much smaller operation. And the warm season grasses, we have breeding being done in Georgia, Nebraska, Texas, Oklahoma, and Florida. It's interesting, this number for cultivar development, 7 to 10 years, because that's about the same number it takes to develop a new crop protection product. So there are some similarities. It takes a long time. And the breeder is looking for desirable traits, and they're breeding to add or eliminate these traits, and they're screening to identify plants with certain traits, evaluating them under a number of stress conditions, looking for environmental and geographical adaptability, looking for seed and vegetative production, and then have to increase this to commercially viable levels, the plant material. There's a number of methods that are used. You know, back when Marion bluegrass was discovered, it was a natural or unconscious selection looking for grasses that were resistant to certain stresses or diseases. Now we have methodical selection, saving desirable plants, and then also new germplasm. And looking for certain traits, much of the discussion this week has talked about salt tolerance, drought tolerance, traffic, and then pest tolerance. And here's an example of endophyte enhancement to reduce insect stress or insect feeding. And the selection techniques, we have recurrent selections where we're exposing these grasses to a particular stress and repeating that to select for certain traits. And now we have marker-assisted techniques where we're actually using DNA sequencing to discover the locations of certain genes. So this is a big improvement. And breeders can use these marker-assisted techniques to really speed up the process, but it doesn't eliminate all the breeding that needs to go on. It's just another tool. There's also cultivar evaluation and protection through the plant variety protection, the PV Plant Variety Protection Act, and you can patent certain plant varieties and also different plant patents. And there's also use patents that can also protect the developer. We also cover seed and sod production. Kevin did a nice job on this. And then seed harvest, seed cleaning, marketing, and distribution. And, of course, the core of cultivar evaluation is the National Turfgrass Evaluation Program. And it's pretty incredible. We have, at any one time, we can have 12 to 15 species of grasses being evaluated, over 600 cultivars, and this is done across 40 states. So really a tremendous effort in the evaluation program and real service to our industry. I covered the section on plant protection products and it talks about the steps that companies do to discover and screen, register, market, and distribute plant protection products and how this relates to the broader agricultural chemical market. And the crop protection industry is really dominated by seven companies that have the ability to do this intense discovery and development programs. The 10 companies, there was a study done that was talked about the spend of 10 companies involved in this, even though there's seven that are in the top 10. They spend an aggregated amount of $2.25 billion every year on new crop protection products or on crop protection products. And now a new product costs $256 million to develop. And these costs have increased dramatically. And you can see what it was in 1995, $151 million, and now we're $256 million. And you need sales of over $100 million just to break even. And because of the market size, turf is a secondary market. It's not really a driver for a discovery effort. You just can't make the investment back that it really takes. And turf product sales of $20 million are quite large, and most of them are about $3 to $5 million. If you look at the global fungicide market, and we think we have a lot of sales in our turf on with fungicides, for wheat and vine crops, if you look at global use of these products, 30% of the sales are on tree and vine crops, where turf and ornamental is at just 5%. So what companies have is a pipeline of products in various stages. So you are always working through this pipeline, and you have some products in discovery where you're doing some early screens, some small plot working, small plot testing. Then you have products in pre-development, and that is really where you start to spend a lot of money because you have to do the very expensive human safety and environmental impact data for regulatory review and registration. You're also talking about manufacturing at this point and where you're going to make the product and label writing and marketing plans. And this is the type of work that we would do at this stage just to see if we have efficacy in the field for a turf product. In development, you're actually going for the registrations. You do a lot of report writing game for these registrations, and you have trials at university sites. And then you're looking for some of these, some of the state registrations, and a state like California, it can cost up to $500,000 just to bring a product into California. Then you have your commercialization stage, where you're demonstrating this at various locations, and then additional costs of re-registration and product defense just to keep your product on the market. And here is an example of a production facility. This is PBI Gordon's facility, and this is the type of facility you have to decide on where you're going to make your product and how you're going to make it. For the turf market, we have to do a lot of phytotoxicity tests, and it's not just working with one genus and species. You have to have safety on a number of grasses, so there's a lot of testing that's done there. We also now have to do residues, test for residues and clippings, and then off-target injury, and there's going to be a lot more emphasis there. And then for turf, you have dislodgeable residue studies that need to be done, and this is called transferable turf residue studies. And that is looking at the residues coming off a treated turf. The last section has to do with turf grass fertilization, and this was written by Bruce Augustin. And this section covers the size and scope of the fertilizer industry, the history of synthetic fertilizers, and also the slow-release nitrogen sources. He talks about the raw materials for turf fertilizers, the NPK sources, the micronutrients, the fillers, and organic and natural fertilizers. He also covers the slow-release sources and how they are utilized, and then gives a recipe for how a turf fertilizer production run might look like if you're blending various components to make a 24-5-10, for instance, 50% slow-release N. He also talks in this section about blending versus the granulated fertilizer production and homogeneous fertilizers. Covers fertilizer grades and then the size guide numbers and the requirements for greens, fairways, lawns, and how that compares to the larger size granules used in ag. He covers the regulations, and a lot of these regulations are state regulated, and the guaranteed analysis is required, as well as pest control on granular fertilizer, and then covers sequestering of carbon and cites a study there that a fertilized lawn can double the amount of carbon sequestered in soils. Now for the fun part, some of these numbers. 80 million. Anybody know what 80 million is? Dan does, but I told him. No one? That is the number of home lawns in the United States. Okay. 14,918. Number of 18. If you took all the golf, it's 18 holes. So if you consider one golf course being 18, 14,918. That's right. 483,649 and 403,109. I thought this was good. Everybody's talking about jobs and employment. 483,649 is the number of jobs that are related to the golf industry. Now, that doesn't include just the superintendent, but that includes all related to golf. And 403,109 is, according to the commerce numbers, that is the number of people that are employed in the lawn and landscape area. So you're looking at close to a million people in a population of 300 million. That's a lot. $291,233. That is the number of commercial turf equipment units shipped by manufacturers in 2005. 470 million. Big number. Any guesses? That is the farm gate value of the seed production in Oregon. That's two-thirds of the U.S. production. 320 million, 293 million. That is the manufacturer crop protection sales in golf, $320 million, and $293 million is in lawn and landscape. 168 million and $3 million. That's the tons of fertilizer used globally and the amount used on U.S. turf. So I thought this was pretty fascinating, some of these numbers. In the end, I think this is a really nice collection of information. The authors have done a superb job of bringing everything together. And it's a one-stop shop where you can get these numbers, and I'm hoping that it'll be utilized by graduate students. A lot of people who are looking for these numbers, they can get them. They can look at these numbers up in this chapter. I'm hoping it'll be really used a great deal by the C5 group as well as a number of TURF students over the years. Thank you.